Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to a Wednesday edition of the RotoWire NBA podcast. It's May 24th. We are still, Alex, in the Eastern Conference Finals, thanks to the Boston Celtics finally getting a win in this series. They take game four at Miami last night. Ended up being a fairly resounding win for the Celtics, who trailed after first quarter, trailed at halftime, and finally had a productive third quarter in this series. They put up 38 in the third, keep it going in the fourth. This felt like really for the first time in the series, one of those games where everybody shot the ball well for Boston. Jaylen Brown was kind of the only guy who ended up having an okay game, but Derek White, 3 3-pointers, Marcus Smart, 3 3-pointers, Al Horford came alive. It was a great game for Jason Tatum, and Grant Williams had, I think, easily his best individual game of the playoffs.
Yeah, Grant Williams was really key for them. Four of six from three. Does well on defense as well. I think I saw a stat that Boston has lost like two games this season, or at least in a regular season, when shooting over 40% from three, and they hit 40% in this game. So that's obviously such a big key to their game plan. They took 45 threes in this game. And I felt like Miami, Boston just did so much of a better job kind of reading Miami's zone, quickly reacting to the double teams and extra pressure. And it just felt like a lot more cohesive than in previous games for Boston. And I felt like there were some miscues for Miami, and I thought Boston did well in transition as well. They just played a really great all-around game.
It is crazy. You don't want to oversimplify it, but when you're just knocking down open threes, I mean, things change dramatically. And that was the number one thing for Boston is, Al Horford hitting three threes instead of rimming out on a couple of those. It completely changes things. And I actually thought Miami did play that poorly. They never really threw in the towel, but you could tell, midway through the fourth quarter, they really didn't have much of a chance to come back. But I thought they played a great first half, especially defensively. They were all over the court defensively, and had a couple more shots gone down for Miami. I still think they would have had a chance or two to steal this game in the second half, but it just got to the point where, I think Boston, hit like 3 or 4 3-pointers in a row over the course of several possessions. And, all of a sudden the lead's at 6, then it's at 9, then it's at 12. And it got away from Miami pretty quickly, but I thought that he played a great first half. I thought defensively they did about all they could, but wasted some possessions. I thought, late in the second half, or late in the second quarter, I should say, they had a chance to kind of go into half with a double digit lead. And I didn't really like some of the shots Kyle Lowry was taking in this game. At one point he missed three, all kind of contested pull-up 3-pointers in a row. I thought he really actually killed them. He ended up being, I think, a neutral plus minus, which can always be a misleading stat, but he couldn't really get anything to go down. And Bam Adebayo, just, it's hard to say it was a bad game. It was just one of those games where he goes by and you're like, I haven't seen Bam do one thing.
Which is crazy, because games 1 through 3, I felt like he was having his best series of the playoffs. at least in games one and two, I felt like his impact was amazing. He was getting to the rim. He was dunking on people, like hitting that floater wasn't an issue for him. And yeah, it's just one of these BAM games. Like you mentioned, it's like, you just forget he's out there. And it's like, what happened? There's just too many of those from him still, but he's also not like a, he's technically their number two option, but he's not quite like a hand this guy the ball and have him create, you know, when we're having issues guy.
It's a little Anthony Davis-y, I think, in some ways, where you know, you see the body type, you see the athleticism, you see the skills, and you're thinking, like, you know, why aren't you doing more? But it's just, it's never really been who the type of player that he is. And you could say the same about AD. You know, he'll have those games where, you know, it's the middle of the fourth quarter and you check his box score and it's like, how is he only taking seven shots? It's like, well, he's also, you know, he's not going to be pulling up more than once or twice per game. He kind of feasts on the offensive glass. And I thought Boston, you know, rebounding wise, also did pretty well. They lost the overall rebounding battle, but you know, the second half especially, I thought they were able to keep Bam Adebayo off the glass. You know, Jimmy Butler had four offensive rebounds, Kyle Lowry had three. The bulk of those came in the first half, but you know, Boston tightened things up defensively. The Heat also missed a lot of shots that they've been making throughout this series. You know, Gabe Vincent, one of four from three. Max Strus, 1 of 5. Duncan Robinson, 0 of 4. Robinson got blocked, I think, twice on three-pointers in this game. He had one where you pump faked, thought he was wide open, and Derek White ended up getting him from behind. But, yeah, it's just one of those games for Miami where, you know, finally the shooting cooled off. And Boston, you know, when you hit 18 threes in an NBA playoff game, you're going to win that game, what, at least 90% of the time?
I think so. I mean, and you said it, like, it's just, this was a Miami team bound to have a bad shooting game from three and a Boston team bound to have a better shooting game from three. And it wasn't pure, like Boston got themselves open looks. This wasn't like they just made a ton of looks that they were completely bricking before. They worked for the threes and they got them. But yeah, I would be curious to know if like any team has won a playoff game when they lose the, I mean, it'd be really tough. I'm sure it's happened, but you lose the 3-point, you know, battle by like 10, or you shoot 25%, the other team shoots 40%. It's almost a guarantee you lose those games.
Yeah, I mean, Miami also has just kind of been banged up throughout the series. Like Gabe Vincent ended up kind of limping to the locker room at one point. You know, Kevin Love was questionable for this game, ended up playing, just really wasn't effective at all. Only played 12 minutes. So, you know, it's a team that feels like it could be running out of gas at any point here, especially with no Tyler Hero. But at the same time, it's the Miami Heat. And I think they get more benefit of the doubt in that area than just about any other team. You know, we touched on this when you joined us on the RotoWire XM show earlier today, but man, have the odds shifted in this series. I think there is, maybe belief's not the right word, but there's real belief at the sportsbook that, you know, but Boston's going to have a chance to climb back into the series. Two of the next three games, if we get that far, will be at home for Boston, including game five tomorrow night, for which the Celtics are 8-point home favorites.
I don't think they should be 8-point home favorites. I'm a big Miami +8 guy. That feels like their number.
Yeah, you always have.
They always get stuck with. I mean, you mentioned. The odds you're getting on Boston to make this comeback, and the odds the odds don't feel correct based on NBA history, right?
Like, it's, let me put it this way: Boston. Sorry to interrupt. Boston's +450. To win the NBA title right now.
Yeah, that's insane.
That's insane.
That doesn't feel like good value at all. And you're right to cut me off. I mean, it's just crazy to me. Like, the value, I don't know. I would bet Miami to win this series. I think that's amazing value. Because it would be the first time in NBA history this happening. Eventually it's going to happen. And I know that, like, just because Boston won game four here doesn't mean that they're like so much more likely to come back and win three more in a row. Like, it's still such an uphill battle. It's never happened before.
Counterpoint, Jaylen Brown said, don't let us win one. So, well, I don't know, maybe he knows something there. Yeah, that finals price is absolutely insane to me. It's like, even if they complete the comeback and win this thing in seven games, you then got to go beat Denver, which will be coming in on over a week's worth of rest. And in my opinion, it's just as good, if not a better team, all things considered. So, I mean, do not bet that. That's just really dumb. If you want to bet Boston just to win this series, they're down to +220. I mean, again, crazy odds when you consider it's what, like 1-0 and like 151 all time teams trying to come back from 3-0. Right. And look, you are right. At some point, that streak is going to be broken. Like anything like this that's within the realm of possibility, it's going to happen eventually. And I see the argument. I really do. And like, I to be totally honest, I wouldn't be shocked if we end up getting at least a game six in this series and maybe a game seven. But at some point, the location of the games doesn't really matter. Like, you have to win four in a row no matter what. And that's just really hard to do against any team in the playoffs. With all that said, this is kind of set up as the perfect circumstance for it to happen because of the talent gap between these two teams. Like, almost always when a team goes up 3-0 in a series, it's like the 76ers being up 3-0 over the Nets in the first round, right? Where it's inconceivable that the Brooklyn Nets could come back and win the series. Whereas coming into this series, wasn't Boston like minus 600 to win it? It's really, really rare that the team that we think is way better, the team that everybody thinks is going to cruise to like a 4 or 5 game series victory, is the team that's down 3-0. So like, I get it, but I still think the odds have over-adjusted in favor of Boston.
I just think Miami has broken the sports books. Like, I don't think they know what to do. I don't think they know where to put the number. I don't think they know how to like account for what we're seeing. I also think a lot of it is they know they get a ton of money from Boston fans. I'm sure they've already they've taken a ridiculous amount of like Boston to win the NBA Finals bets from before the season started. And so they're dealing with a lot of that as well. For something that basically is, if the odds were reflective of like how it's actually been through NBA history, you would want like 150-1 odds on Boston coming back. It's more likely than that, but is it like 3-1 likely? No, I don't think so.
The NBA regular season has come and gone, which means it's time for a new way to play daily fantasy basketball for the playoffs. Rival Fantasy is the fantasy platform reinventing the way daily and weekly games are played. And they brought 3 new games to the ballpark this year that fantasy players won't find anywhere else. With unique games like Fantasy Bingo, head-to-head player challenges, and over-unders in Fantasy Book, daily fantasy has never been better. Right now, RotoWire listeners can get a $50 protected first play. That means if you win your first play, you keep your winnings. But if you lose your first entry, Rival Fantasy will fully refund you up to $50. Go to play.rivalfantasy.com/signup. Again, that's play.rivalfantasy.com/signup. And use our code ROTOWIREMBA, all one word, ROTOWIREMBA. Use that at signup and deposit a minimum of $25 to get your first entry on Rival protected up to $50. Now's the time to step onto the court and become a Rival today. Welcome to the arena.
Yeah, I think when you phrase it that way, you know, I mean, it's closer to 2-1 at this point. Boston is plus 220. It's like, okay, if you play out the rest of the series twice, Boston completes the 7-game comeback and wins it in 7.
Right.
You know, one of those times. Like, I don't know. I mean, if you want to give me like 10-1 even, which, you know, relatively speaking, compared to history, would still seem kind of short. I would say that, you know, it's like, all right, you play this out 10 times. Yeah, Boston probably does come back and win it in 7 in one of those instances. But yeah, plus 220 is wild. And that is a good reminder by you that these are not, you know, sportsbooks are not predictive. There's a lot of things going on behind the scenes that influence these lines, but wild nonetheless, because Miami's dominated the series still. And, you know, it took a monumental shooting game from Boston. And I mean, it did get a little ridiculous in the third quarter when it felt like they were hitting everything. And Miami just could not buy a basket. But I really thought at halftime, you know, it felt like the Celtics' entire season came down to that third quarter, because Miami played exactly the first half that it needed to. And we saw a lot of frustrated possessions for Boston, you know, some careless turnovers in the first half. Jaylen Brown looked lost. You know, Jason Tatum was playing okay, but didn't really settle in until the second half. So I actually thought Miami played a pretty good game. And, you know, sometimes you just chalk it up and say, look, if they're shooting like that, we just don't have much of a chance.
Right. It's just, this was a back against the wall game. Like, what did this, did anything really happen in this game that it feels like you can analyze and go, well, they unlocked something? Like, how is Miami going to solve this that Boston did?
Not necessarily. I do think like Grant Williams becoming an actual like usable piece in this series is big. You know, he had 12 points in game 3 as well. He's 6 of 9 from 3 over the last 2 games. But at the same time, you know that the regression is coming, right? Like you can't just say like, all right, well, he'll just give us 4 threes every game going forward. So obviously you needed this game more than anything to keep the series going. And it's great that you got that shooting night from Grant Williams, but you also have to know going forward that you can't depend on it. I would say just the number one thing that we saw, and this is more of an intangible than anything you can really, you know, take into account betting wise, is we saw Boston have a backbone, right? I mean, I think a lot of people thought game three was it. They're broken. They don't like each other. They're sick of their coach, all that. And you know, whether that's true or not, maybe we'll find out this offseason. This team did rally together and play an incredible third quarter and an incredible second half, come back on the road and win this game four. And even though they're the better team, even though they have more talent and they should be expected to do this, I think a lot of people kind of lost faith in this team internally, you know, kind of mentally. And, you know, I think they at least showed me something there last night.
Yeah, they showed you something. Just to me, I don't know. The thing is, I also don't know what I would have needed to see in this game to be like, well, I'm picking, or like, I really think Boston has a chance now. It's just, you know, we kind of know the argument, right? Boston, more talent. Yeah. I just think this could have easily been any other game in the series. This could have been game one, and then, you know, Miami rattles off four wins in a row. I mean, some of it's a three-point shooting. It's, again, this Boston team, they've given us no reason to trust them throughout the playoffs, and Miami has given us every single reason. And to me, it's hard to just say, like, that suddenly flipped now when Miami was up 3-0, now 3-1.
That is an interesting point you make about, you know, the order of the games not necessarily mattering. I think you're right for the most part. Obviously, there is some sort of, like, you know, kind of immeasurable degree of pressure when you're in a game seven versus a game one. You know, we've seen a lot of teams kind of ease into series and pick things up as they go along. But I mean, I'll just ask you straight up now, like, what do you expect to happen tomorrow night in game five?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if Boston won, but like I said, I'd be on Miami plus +8. I think I did feel like a lot of this game, Miami felt a little tired. The thing is, you're not getting any more rest, you know, throughout the rest of the series. Like, it's just the one day off, but I'm not shocked that they lost this game. I thought they were going to win this game. I'm just going to pick Miami. I think Miami's going to come out. They're going to win. But again, I can't be shocked if it goes to if Boston wins this next game. It's just a game six wouldn't surprise me at all.
If we get a game six, I think that's where Miami finishes it out.
Right.
I mean, I almost think baked into the odds is if we get a game seven, it's just a foregone conclusion that Boston wins, which, if you're playing the Sixers, maybe that's the truth. I don't know if that's the case against Miami. Like, I don't think this Miami team just rolls over in that situation, especially for, you know, going up against a Celtics team that has shown us time and time again that they're prone to these just completely off night, no show type of games, even on the biggest stage. So, yeah, I mean, obviously being back in Boston, that is an advantage for the Celtics, but you're right. It's not that big of an advantage given that both teams are traveling. And I actually read yesterday, I have to verify this, I think it was our guy Adam Kaufman, who does some work for DK Live out in Boston, he tweeted that the Celtics arrived in Miami yesterday afternoon.
That's surprising, actually. Why would that be?
I don't know. I'm trying to pull up the tweet just to make sure I didn't read it wrong, but I saw that this morning and why has a team ever done that?
That's good. Yeah, that's pretty bizarre. I want to know the reason for that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm going to be on with him later tonight on his show out in Boston on the radio, so I'll have to ask him about that. He also tweeted earlier today kind of an interesting note on, you know, this discussion we're having about teams crawling back into series. The higher seed all time, obviously, is 0-13 when falling behind 0-3. Only one of those teams even forced a game six, and that was Orlando against Boston in 2010. So, overwhelmingly, in these situations, you know, teams don't even get all the way to the point that it reaches a game seven.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right to point out, like you said before, the sports books have to fall under the assumption that, like, if this goes back to Boston for game seven, that Boston should be favored. And they would also have all the momentum, obviously, going into that series, but they just haven't been that good at home, you know, during these playoffs. Obviously, that's how they got down 0-3 in the first place.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, let's talk a little Lakers Nuggets postmortem. It's been a couple days now. Obviously, pretty much everything has been said about this series. It's not often that you come out of a LeBron James playoff series and say, like, man, the other team was just better. They just beat us. Obviously, it happened against the Warriors a few times. I think that the 2014 Spurs series certainly comes to mind as well. But, don't really come out of this. Like, it's funny, like, when a team loses a series, whether it's in the first, second, third round, sometimes even the finals, it's crazy to kind of track how, like, a fan base reacts on Twitter. Yeah. Or wherever you're reading. It's like everybody turns on everybody, and this team that you loved a month ago, all of a sudden everybody sucks and you need to trade everybody. It's funny. I didn't really see a whole lot of that with the Lakers, with the exception of D'Angelo Russell, of course. I do think most Lakers fans just kind of, like, admitted defeat and were like, yeah, man, there's just nothing we could do against Jokic and this Nuggets team.
I mean, Jokic is playing like the best player in the world. I don't know what you were supposed to necessarily expect from this Lakers team. You know, they look bad all year. They make some good moves at the deadline. It looks pretty smooth, but they're playing without LeBron a lot of the time. And then you're talking about, like, April basketball, which is always a complete toss-up. And then you're kind of expecting it to all come together in the postseason when LeBron's playing on this bum foot and AD gets hurt all the time and he's inconsistent. And, I think for once the Lakers fans seem a little pretty measured in their takes. And we talked about this on the XM show. Like, I think the main thing that they can look forward to this offseason is just a ton of flexibility. The trades that they made,
finally.
It's basically AD, LeBron. And then it's like, well, we got some blanks to fill in.
They're kind of back to square one when they got LeBron, right? And that was, like, a big part of the reason he wanted to go there is, like, all right, we have some young assets who we could trade, and they eventually did for Anthony Davis. And he left a situation where there was, like, no way out, right? The Cavs had all these contracts and, guys who were kind of at the end of the string and were kind of stuck between trying to contend around LeBron and rebuilding. And now he has this blank slate, which is all well and good. The problem is he's going to be, 39 next season. So you're not necessarily in the greatest spot with LeBron. And we'll talk about the potential retirement talk in a little bit. I just think, it would be kind of a misgiving, I guess, by the Lakers to try to completely blow this thing up because they came up short against the Nuggets. Like, I think Denver proved once again, for the third time in these playoffs, that they're the deepest and they're the most complete team. And they're also the team that has the fewest weaknesses, right? Like, almost nobody on this team is a significant liability. Like, we could say Jamal Murray, is he a great defender? No, but teams are also not hunting him to the level that they are, like, the absolute worst defenders at that position in the NBA. I mean, I was just blown away at the consistency. The Lakers probably should have won game four. I mean, they're up double digits at the half, and Denver just comes roaring back. It was almost effortless.
Yeah, Jeff asked me on the radio, like, what's Denver's biggest weakness? And I was like, I'm not 100% sure, actually. Like, I guess it's technically their defense. Like, their inconsistency on defense, partially. You mentioned Jamal Murray, but Jamal Murray's also liable to go off for 30 points in any given game. That's what separates him right. from guys like D'Lo, for example.
Exactly.
MPJ, also a questionable defender, but has, like, the length to make up for it. He's also a great rebounder, pretty underrated there. Yeah, their bench, I mean, a lot of Jeff Green minutes. But you mentioned it, just the consistency from them and the fact that you can't really bully Jokic. He's practically impossible to game plan for, at least it seems like, when he's on offense. You know, the Lakers tried everything. That was the thing. It was like game two, they were like, well, what if we do Rui Hachimura? And we, you know, like, they were already in that mode after like 40 minutes of basketball.
I'm just wondering at this point, like, is there anybody in the league who defends Jokic well, you know, even like at an above average clip? I don't know. Like, it feels like there's, you know, you could say this about any superstar. It's like, yeah, nobody guarded LeBron well in 2015. Same with KD, same with Curry, et cetera. But usually there's like one or two guys you could say, yeah, they bothered him at least. Like, I don't even, like, if Anthony Davis was getting bodied for an entire series the way he was, I don't know who the archetype is. Like, we'll see what Bam Adebayo can do if that ends up being the matchup. Obviously, the Celtics have a number of bigs that they could throw at Jokic, but, you know, the size, strength, kind of nimbleness combination is, like, there's not an archetype of player where you say, okay, this makes sense. This guy will be able to slow him down.
Yeah, I'm trying to look up right now the lowest field goal percentage Jokic had against any team where he played at least four games. It's actually Utah, believe it or not. Walker Kessler, the Jokic stopper.
Say Udoka Azubuki must have got him.
Yeah, and then it's crazy, man, because, like, it's 54% from the field against Utah in four games. The next lowest team that he played at least three games against was the Clippers at 59.5%.
That's
like insane. No team in the NBA can hold Jokic below like 55% shooting.
I mean, he shot 50% from the field in this series against the Lakers. Like, I actually think they controlled him fairly well. He's just at the point where there's only so much you can do. I mean, it is actually kind of peak LeBron-like in some ways, the passing, especially in the half court. Going back to Murray, by the way, he led the series in scoring by a mile. You know, I mean, if you could say he's a subpar defender, that's true. You could totally live with that when he's given you 33, 6, and 5 for the series, right? I mean, he was unbelievable. The 30-point half in game three, I mean, he was arguably the best player in the series that had Nikola Jokic, LeBron James, and Anthony Davis. I also think, you know, when you talk about what's the Nuggets' biggest weakness, I think they've had some favorable matchups, to be sure. Obviously, both the Lakers and the Suns have a ton of premier talent. Neither of those teams have any depth. They're actually constructed pretty similarly, and neither of those teams can shoot threes, right? And their first-round matchup is the Timberwolves, which we can just throw out. So I do think Denver, they'll be tested a lot more against teams that can consistently shoot the three. But, you know, when they're shooting 40% from three for the series and their opponent is shooting 33, 34% on dramatically fewer attempts, like they go into every game with a mathematical advantage that's really, really tough to overcome.
Yeah, Denver, I mean, that's part of what Jokic does. It's not that he just averages 11 assists a game. It's just 11 assists where these passes are like guys coming in the basket for just straight up dunks.
Yeah.
And he gets his teammates a ton of wide open threes. And so
they're
percentage
basically
is like
11 layups per game.
Yes. Yeah. And you look at the percentages and you want to say, like, well, it's going to regress. It's like, well, all these guys are elite three-point shooters and a lot of their looks are just completely wide open. You know, it's so hard for them. Like, I don't know. Like, we saw the the Lakers, part of what helped them beat the Golden State was they just forced all the – they tried to force all those three-point shooters to the rim. But, you know, the guys on Denver are way more – they're way better finishing at the rim than a lot of the guys on Golden State. And they just have way more options when Jokic is the guy making those passes compared to like Draymond, who was never going to take a 15-foot jumper. And Jokic doesn't even miss from 15 feet.
Yeah. I mean, Jokic, there's only so much you could say about him at this point. I mean, the touch around the rim, the touch in the mid range, the touch even from three in this series was completely out of hand. And yeah, I think Anthony Davis ended up taking a lot of heat, especially after game four where he was pretty quiet, but I think he did what he could, man. And they were asking a ton out of him. You know, Rui Hachimura, you know, the fact that he was kind of the backup big man in this series. You know, we did see our Tristan Thompson minutes, thankfully, in game four, which I actually think he played pretty well. Like, I think when he was in there, like basically the reason they put him in was they were getting killed on the offensive glass yet again. And he was in there. He was fired up. He was putting his body into guys. And you know, they kept running into that issue where if you're bringing Anthony Davis over as the help defender, that's all well and good. He could force a miss, but then you're in a disadvantaged situation on the offensive glass. So I think, you know, it was more of a personnel issue for the Lakers than it was guys not showing up, you know, bad coaching, bad scheming. I just think they ran into a buzzsaw in a team that knows what it is, a team that has seven or eight guys who all have very defined roles. And, you know, the team on the other side is changing its starting lineup night to night, changing its rotations right. night to night, changing defensive strategy. Like, the Lakers were basically sent into a scramble midway through game one.
They were. And you bring up a good point about this Denver team, which is they've been together for a long time. They've played a lot of games together, especially Murray and Jokic. Like, their two-man game is on a, you know, it's like Malone Stockton-esque, although almost like the reverse of that. Yeah. With Jokic as the passer and Aaron, like, the thing is, the guys they brought into this team who are newer additions, like Aaron Gordon, KCP, Bruce Brown, these guys, they're just all seamless fits within the Nuggets team, right? And they fit so perfectly with what Jokic wants to do. They're good defenders. And again, I like the moves LA made at the trade deadline, but it just, they couldn't figure out exactly what they needed to do.
I think Jokic has officially entered that very rare territory. And I would say there's usually only two or three guys in the league at once you could say this about, who, if you give them a decent supporting cast, you're guaranteed to make a run at the finals. If you give them a very good supporting cast like this one, you're almost guaranteed to make the finals. And I know that sounds kind of crazy to say, but like, obviously LeBron was like that for an 8-year span where it was just, all right, give this guy a decent team, you're in. You know, I think Giannis was kind of at that point a couple of years ago, obviously fell short this year. You know, I think that's where I would draw the line. You know, I think KD has been in that zone before. Steph Curry's been close, always going to be a little more difficult for smaller guys. But, Jokic, I think, definitively proved that he is on even a different level from the guy who won the MVP this year and a different level from other guys who are in the top five conversation. I mean, this entire playoffs really has felt like a kind of delayed coming out party for a guy who has two MVPs.
Yeah, he's just amazing, man. He makes every single guy on the team better. And he just reads the game so well. Again, that's part of that's the issue the Lakers ran into. And it just feels like he's impossible to game plan for, because you put a smaller guy on him, he bullies him. You put a bigger guy on him, he can shoot threes and he'll do handoffs. You try to double him, he's always going to make the right pass. You know, if you try to zone, he's going to just stand in the middle of the zone and hit those like 15 footers. I mean, it is like LeBron in that way, where it doesn't always feel like there's a great answer. I feel like Jokic is harder to game plan for offensively than even LeBron was in his prime sometimes, because LeBron, I mean, we saw the Spurs do it. They're like, just make him shoot, sag off of him.
Yep.
Try to force him into even three pointers, but more so like get him going to his left. He's going to try to take that like 18 footer. That's not his shot. And I don't know exactly what you're trying to force Jokic to do.
Everybody has a weakness, some sort of weakness for LeBron. Like you said, it's always kind of been shooting, even free throw shooting. The 3-point shooting has always come and gone. Like, I mean, Jokic is, for as good of a 3-point shooter as he is, like, he's still really hesitant. You know, throughout the series, he really wasn't taking him unless he was wide open, unless it was kind of end of a possession, you know, kind of using the shot fake really effectively. He took 17 threes over the course of four games, which for him, that's more than I would have guessed. But you know, you think how many of those were desperation. What is his weakness right now? Like, I think everybody would have said, oh, defensively, he's no Embiid, he's no Giannis. Like, that's true. But I also can't really count many possessions throughout this series where I thought, wow, Jokic is really, you know, he really let them down on defense there.
I mean, I think defensively, it would just be, I think he really struggles against guys who are hyper athletes, like guys who can really get downhill and like dunk over him or kind of like get him to hesitate, come out and blow past him for like a layup. I think he really struggles there. But the rest of his defense is good. And obviously his rebounding is dominant. Offensively, man, I mean, you kind of mentioned him with the 3-point shooting. He doesn't like to take the three. So I think as an opposing team, you want to try to get him to do it, but if he's that wide open, he's just going to take him. And he's 47% this playoffs on basically four attempts a game. So that's hard too.
All right, let's do the LeBron question. You put on the XM show today, I asked you point blank, what are the chances that LeBron's not in the NBA next season? You said 5%. I think that's fair. That might even be high. I cannot imagine LeBron walking away with this as his last game. Being asked that question and being 25 minutes after just losing game four, getting swept out of the playoffs, knowing that you're probably set for surgery this summer, knowing that you have no idea what your team is going to look like. It is LeBron, and he's always calculated. So, I'm not saying he, is just kind of speaking off the cuff here, but to me, we've seen LeBron make statements like this, not necessarily about his retirement, but, being kind of purposely vague, almost tongue in cheek. I would be shocked if he actually retires. And I don't think this is the end of this, by the way. I think in like a month, there'll be a Shams report that like LeBron is actually considering retiring, and we'll talk about it all summer. He'll probably skip organized team activities and all that. I think, when you get older, you just don't want to go through all the offseason stuff. So, if you're him, you want to see how the roster turns out. You want to look at some other teams and say, okay, is there an opportunity for me somewhere else as I get to the end of my career? The most interesting scenario that I saw was somebody, I think this is just a random person, laid this out on Twitter, like LeBron needs to go team up with Steph Curry. Both of these guys are nearing the end of their careers. Both of them shouldn't care what anybody thinks anymore. They've always wanted to play together. They should just do it. I don't think that's happening. And that would probably require LeBron to go to the Warriors. That's the one move that I could not imagine him making.
I mean, didn't KOC write a whole article on like Draymond trying to recruit LeBron to the Warriors? I don't think it's just some random Twitter people saying that. That would be shocking. That would be more shocking to me than him retiring. Let's put it that way. I would be more surprised if LeBron James was a Golden State Warrior than if he just quit playing basketball.
Yeah, I think I agree. No, I don't know. Now that I think about this, like, does LeBron really care at this point what people think? Because if he doesn't, then like basketball wise, that would make some sense. I don't know how Golden State would be able to afford that. All we talk about with them is like the money issues that they have with their team going forward. I assume that would mean, Wiggins is gone to like renounce Clay. I don't know, but that would just be so strange. That would be so strange.
Yeah, I don't think he's retiring. I mean, unless he's not saying something about the foot, like maybe the foot's actually quite bad and the surgery is not going to be some easy thing. I really don't know. That the rehab process isn't going to be. I mean, how many surgeries has LeBron even had in his career? Less than five?
I would think
it's got to be, right?
I mean, I don't know how many have been like publicly disclosed, but I think like what 90% of any sort of major injuries he's had have been in the last 5 years.
Well, and he broke his hand that one time, but I don't think he had surgery for that. He punched the.
That's right. In the finals. I have no idea. Yeah. I think that people were always wondering if that was even real. I have no idea. Probably, but I guess it was off season. So it went unreported. I found some odds here via our friends at PointsBet. Odds for the next team LeBron James will play for: Lakers -700, no team /retire 5-1. Cavaliers 12-1, Warriors 15-1, Knicks 15-1. The Knicks would be awesome. Every time I watch a primetime game at MSG, like a playoff game or one of those like Sunday ABC games, I always regret like, man, I LeBron in Miami was awesome, but I kind of wish like peak LeBron had ended up in New York.
That would have been a lot of fun. I did see a random Twitter thread about like somebody, because reporters are always like, Embiid is the next target for the Knicks, as if like, we've been doing this dance forever, right? Giannis is the next target for the Knicks. Durant is the next target. Like, we've been doing this for 20 years. Yeah. But there was some guy in the comments who's like, what difference does that make? Do we really want this guy? I was just like, so I'm sure there would be some Knicks fans who would be like, we don't want this old guy. Like, LeBron, he's washed up. But I agree, it would be fun. LeBron and MSG, for half of his games. I agree with you. Like, it would be fun.
I think he's been watching a lot of Julius Randle and saying, man, right. I would love to play with that guy. Yeah, I think he would really compliment me. In terms of team context, like I guess unless LeBron is like dying to move across the country to New York, which I probably at this point in his life, he isn't, especially with the son playing at USC. Right. I don't know what the advantage would be. I saw another tweet. I think it was kind of a similar thing about like fictional odds of where he's going to play. And like, I saw the Sixers were on the list. I'm like, okay, like that, basketball wise, I could actually get on board with. Like, that would make some sense. But I think the Lakers are going to put together a better team than the Knicks next year.
I think so too. Yeah. I mean, they have so much flexibility. I mean, it's not a great free agent class, but I mean, what are you going to do? You still have yeah. plenty of options. Like maybe they can grab Van Vliet or something. And, you know, that would be a huge upgrade for them. I'm yeah. not even a huge Van Vliet guy, but they got stuff they can do. So the point about, you know, Bronny going to USC, that's why LeBron's in LA partially in the first place, right? Because he wants to see his son play and all that stuff, which he does obviously very often. So I think he yeah. wants to be in LA or at least on the West Coast, it seems like.
Yeah, Sacramento, maybe. I don't know. Right? No, you're totally right about that. I think at this point in his career, that's like probably almost equal to what's going on basketball wise. And I also, you know, I mean, LeBron very rarely kind of opens up and is like introspective, but he kind of seems to be like a guy who is coming to terms with what his legacy might be at this point. You know, I think like 3 or 4 years ago, it was very clear. Like anytime he spoke, it was like all about winning, all about getting titles. Like he does kind of feel like he's cooled off on that a little bit, even coming off of a game 4 loss the other night. You know, I think they basically asked him like, you know, would you be okay walking away? And he's like, yeah, I would. And I kind of believe him. Like, even though I don't think he's retiring, I do think he's come around on the idea of like, okay, maybe my life is not a failure if I don't get to 6 rings.
Yeah. He's talked a lot about how when he quits, it won't be because his body, it'll be because he doesn't like want it anymore. Like it's not, he doesn't have yeah. that same drive anymore. And so in that sense, I think that's a good point because it does feel like he's cooled off a little bit in that sense where, you know, I mean, that getting that ring in Cleveland was such a huge accomplishment. The bubble title, obviously a huge accomplishment as well. And I don't know, maybe he kind of realizes that like, hey, even if I get another one here, people are really not going to change their opinion on,
no,
am I better than Michael Jordan based on this ring I got when I was 39 years old?
Exactly. And I also think, you know, it's gotten to the point now where he's played so many seasons that, like, you know, he could win. I don't know. There's still a scenario, I guess, where, you know, if he comes back strong from the surgery and he's averaging like, you know, 28-8-8 yet again next season and the Lakers win a title, like people aren't going to discount it. But we're now moving into the point where he's played so many more seasons than Michael Jordan that he could win like 4 more rings and there'd still be people that were like, well, yeah, if Jordan had played that many seasons, he would have won that many too.
Right. And so I think for LeBron, I don't know. I mean, how much of this comes down to like, does he have any interest in, yeah, because if his competitive drive is kind of gone, if he's not really chasing anything anymore besides like yeah. pure racking up numbers, like I want to climb up, I want more points between me and the next guy. And I want
yeah, right.
all these assists. And, you know, I think sometimes I don't know if we overrate like how much LeBron would just play basketball for another 4 years because he thinks basketball is fun. Like he just wants to play in the NBA because it's a fun thing to do that he really enjoys. Yeah. Like it's hard to say like how much these guys are influenced by just like, I'm going to go out there because this is a fun thing to do. I really enjoy it. What would I do if I stopped?
That is a great point. It's easy for us being like I would give anything to play like 1 minute in the NBA, let alone 20 seasons where it's like, yeah, how could you ever want to stop playing? But yeah, especially when you reach his level where it's like, all right, you have $1 billion. You kind of have a whole separate life off the court. You have a family. Like, yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy to see how, you know, like the appeal of the NBA probably wears off after 20 years. You know, maybe not after 10 years or 15 years, but when you're that deep into it, like any job, you know, it's probably pretty taxing, especially the amount of time and, you know, and effort you have to put into your body. On the records front, it's hard to say, you know, like, does LeBron really care about like if somebody breaks a scoring record? You know, I think he cares a lot more about that than he would ever say publicly. I think to him, that's probably like being the all-time leading scorer is like as much of a notch in his belt as like another title would be. But there's like nobody remotely close in terms of active players. You know, like yeah. depending on how long Luka Doncic plays, given right. the start that he's off to, like he would have a chance, but it's not like, you know, he feels any pressure right now. It's like, this is something that wouldn't be broken for another like 15 to 20 years minimum, and in all likelihood longer than that. The last thing I'll say on this, and it kind of ties into, you know, the Jordan LeBron argument of longevity. And, you know, there's always going to be people that kind of take both camps of like, you know, LeBron playing this long and this well is so impressive versus, well, you know, he's only playing this long because he has to chase Michael Jordan, who did it in fewer seasons. I do think the more seasons he plays, the more he's just opening himself up to failure, right? I mean, at least they got the one in the bubble. If you're a LeBron fan or if you're a Lakers fan, but like you can almost argue that looking back, it's like, would he have been better off just walking away, like after putting up 50 in game one of the 2018 finals, because he's now gone, what, 1-for-5 in LA. The one title came in the bubble. It's like, if he plays three more years and doesn't win a ring in those 3 years, then I think people would look back and be like, okay, yeah, it's all well and good. You played well into your 40s, but you know, you played like with each passing season that he doesn't win a ring, I think only having four, putting that in air quotes, looks less impressive, if that makes sense.
I think some of it depends on, like, I think in the immediate future, yes, because he's still so good. You know,
yeah, I think,
like,
dude, by the way, that is getting totally glossed over. It's like, I don't think people that like don't watch basketball closely realize like how insane he was during the regular season.
He was fantastic. I mean, it's as a 38-year-old, he makes like 30 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists look mostly effortless. Like, it really feels like there are games where LeBron tries for like six total minutes, and the rest of the game he's kind of just like on autopilot, and he's putting up like, you know, fringe triple doubles every single night with 30 points. Some of this is just like, people are going to consider the season's failures, like you're alluding to, because he's still playing so well. And I think there would be a point where if we got to the version of LeBron that was basically just like, you know, letting the yarn run out on his career, like, is he really playing in the league when he's 43 and he's playing like, we see the LeBron that's playing like 26 minutes a game and kind of just like, I don't even know how to describe, like, there's just that doesn't happen a lot necessarily. Like, we see some guys, you know, like KG played a long time. Like Vince Carter, like, we're not going to see LeBron. I don't think, I mean, it would be interesting to see LeBron kind of like basically literally phase himself out of the NBA based on like, he literally just cannot do it anymore. But so the conversation gets really complicated because at some point we can't say LeBron is the best player in the league, and we can't say that he's the best player in any given team that he's on that has a chance to win a title.
Yeah. He's kind of at a point of like diminishing returns with that, where it's like, okay, you're still really good to the point where people expect you to win, but you've lost that like top 5% that made you the best player in the league and was, you know, you were able to will any team essentially to the finals. So yeah, it's an interesting spot to be. I think your initial point before we went down this long road is correct, that there's really not a whole lot he could do, I think, to change anyone's mind. You know, at this point, you're either on Team LeBron or you're Team Anti-LeBron. You've probably been that way for most of his entire career. And, you know, I think like winning the title in 16 might have flipped some people, probably not that many. But yeah, it's hard to imagine him like having another phase of his career where any opinions are really changed there. All right. Anything else you want to hit ahead of game 5 tomorrow? Anything with the Nuggets? Anything off season wise?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm just interested to see where this coaching carousel goes, but I don't have any takes on like where I think anybody's going or who's necessarily the best fit for anybody. I mean, you know, I think Nurse might be the best option for any team if you had to just like, who's the best guy available, but I'm interested, but I don't have any hot takes.
Yeah, we kind of agreed to not dig in on that just because, you know, I wouldn't consider myself a coaching expert, especially when we're talking about like assistants and things of that nature. And, you know, there's like kind of the same pool of guys in contention for a lot of jobs. And, you know, once the dust settles, you know, that we'll get into that and analyze each of those fits. And my guess is that by the time we talk around this time next week, we'll have at least one or two jobs filled. Seems like some teams, you know, Milwaukee and Phoenix are kind of getting to the final stages, but it's been difficult because like all of a sudden, like the market is flooded with way more, you know, available, proven high upside coaches than normal. Like usually you have like one or two guys who have either been sitting out or are kind of rising assistants. I mean, it does feel like we have like four, potentially five, depending on what Boston is doing, you know, really appealing jobs open and also a really deep pool of candidates.
Yeah. The Boston thing is interesting because maybe some of these guys are waiting and telling these teams like, look, hey, I would love to coach Milwaukee, but I also would be really interested in getting an interview for the Boston job if it becomes available. So I think that's a dynamic as well.
Yeah, it is crazy that the team with Giannis could end up being like the third best coaching job this summer. You know, I mean, we have Milwaukee, Boston, Philly, Phoenix, Toronto all open. Am I forgetting any other active openings?
Detroit?
Oh, yeah. For some reason, I thought they hired somebody, but they did not. You're right. I think there was like a reported hiring a couple of weeks ago, and that wasn't actually true. Ty Lue has kind of been dipping his toes into this as well, but All right, we're cutting it off here before we get too deep into Clippers coaching speculation. TBD and if we'll have another episode this week, but we'll see how the schedule breaks down. Could depend on what happens tomorrow night.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.